It's certainly good to be down here with all you people again. And it's definitely good to be able to be here again. That's wonderful. In Mr. Park's opening comments, he said something about the weather. But when I think of the weather in the wintertime, you know, and associated with going to church and having to cancel services for snow and everything, I remember this story about what happened at this Baptist church one time. And you didn't have a sermonette, so I'm going to tell you this little story. It snowed about 8 inches where this little Baptist church was, and there was only two people that lived close enough to walk. That was the pastor and one deacon. So they both walked and came to church. And so after it was time to start, the pastor thought, well, you know, we might as well go on back home. So he said to the deacon, said, I guess we'll just cancel services and go on back home. And the deacon, an old farmer that lived in the community, he said, well, he said, if I went down to feed my cows and only one came up, said, I'd feed her. So it made the pastor mad, and he flew into preaching. And he preached the awfulest hellfire damnation song you've ever heard in your life, and he preached for about 2 hours. And he got through, he looked over to the deacon and said, how'd you like that? He said, well, like I was saying, he said, if I went down to feed my cows and only one come up, he said, I wouldn't give her the whole load. So I'm not going to give you the whole load. We started anticipating and looking forward to and planning for the fall holy days and the Feast of Tabernacles ever since last spring. And now it only seems a short time they have come and gone. And Thanksgiving is already upon us. And I have a question. Does Black Friday and Turkey Day and all of the busyness of everyday life and the mad rush of the people around us getting ready for the winter holidays, do these things push the real meaning of Thanksgiving out of our minds? I thought it would be appropriate to talk about Thanksgiving and giving thanks today, since Thanksgiving is not all that far away. And my title is Giving Thanks Helps Us to See God. And we can begin to talk about a little bit about the national holiday itself, Thanksgiving, it being one of the holidays that the world keeps, here in America at least, that we can agree with and celebrate because it's a biblical principle, giving thanks. When we hear the people around us or even the local news talk about the origin of Thanksgiving, they most likely talk about something about the pilgrims. But they most likely will not talk about who the pilgrims were. Webster's Collegiate Dictionary has these three definitions of pilgrims. The first one is one who journeys in foreign lands. Of course, they had to be journeying to a foreign land because their homeland is not foreign. The second one is one who travels to a shrine or holy place as a devotee. In other words, somebody that's devoted to a particular religion and they're traveling in relationship to that. And the third one is one of the English colonists settling at Plymouth in 1620. The reason that one may travel to or from a foreign land is not mentioned. The pilgrims were all, the pilgrims that we're talking about fits all three of these definitions. They were traveling to a new land seeking religious freedom. And many were of the true Church of God, who kept the true Sabbath and possibly the Passover. I have read that the two things that they kept down through the ages was the Sabbath and the Passover. But these people ran afoul of the Church of England because they would not pay homage to the Church of England or to Rome. According to research of Randy Stiver, many had earlier sought refuge in Holland and sailed from there to the New World. Many pilgrims who came to the New World called Sunday the Sabbath, as most of the people that we know in the world today does. So when you're doing research, you had to be careful about where it says Sabbath keepers. It very well could be people that start calling Sunday the Sabbath. But in the course of time, the true Sabbath keepers migrated from Massachusetts, where most of them were, to Newport, Rhode Island, where the earliest true Church of God congregation in America met. Let me read a quote from a letter that George Washington wrote to the congregation meeting in Newport, Rhode Island. And this is just an excerpt from the letter. It says, "May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants." It was love one another, you know, enjoy the company of one another. "While everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid." You're probably familiar with that. It's a prophecy of Micah in Micah 4, and it's a prophecy of the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. You may have heard something about that at the feast. And George Washington used that phrase in almost 40 letters that's still preserved in the archives at Mount Vernon. So later, some of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were members of the true Church of God, keeping the true Sabbath and the Passover. The pilgrims may have been credited for starting the traditional Thanksgiving celebration in America, but they most likely got the idea from the Bible and maybe even the holy days doing something similar to the holy days. But let's read a verse that David wrote in Psalms 42, verse 4. And this is a New King James Version. David probably wrote this in his old age when he was probably not able to go and meet with the church. And Psalms 42, 4 says, "When I remember these things, I pour out my soul within me." That's prayer. It was prayerfully. "For I used to go with the multitude. I went with them to the house of God with a voice of joy and praise, with a multitude that kept a pilgrim feast." And that's the New King James terminology. The 1611 King James has it a little bit differently. Again, my title is "Giving Thanks Helps Us to See God." We, in the true faith, and being God's begotten children, waiting for the return of Jesus Christ, for our birth into his family, should give thanks year-round, and not just at Thanksgiving. Daily, as the Lord's model prayer suggests, if not hourly or when we recognize or see a blessing or realize that there was a blessing. When we give thanks, it helps us to appreciate God's blessings and recognize them more. And as we meditate and think about God's blessings, we see God in those blessings more. We see God in the fruits of the Spirit being manifested in the lives of the brethren. We see the love between brethren. God is love. When you see that love, you're seeing God, because if it were not for God, there would be no love. Satan would be in charge, and it would be all different situation. There are many, many acts of helping one another. We see, especially on the Sabbath, setting up the church hall is an act of love. It's an act of giving, making the coffee, which I enjoyed a cup here a little while ago, bringing snacks, and you could go on and on and on about things that we see and acts of love. We see joy and peace in the brethren. God is in that. If we were not for God being there, there would be no joy and peace. I know some in the church who have had a lot to thank God for, and I'm sure they did, and that's all well and good. But it may be just as important to thank God for having just enough to make it. And as I get older, I become more and more convinced that most of us in God's church are in the category, or at least many, are in the category of having just enough. We're able to pay the bills and to have the things we need. Jesus praised the widow who put in two mites. She was a poor widow and obviously had just enough to make it from day to day. You look at Mark 12, verse 41 for the story. Mark 12, verse 41. Now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites, which is a quadrin. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, see, there was a special lesson here. And he wanted to make sure that his disciples got it. So he called them aside and said to them, assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. Just speaking of percentage-wise, it's obvious that she put in more because she put in all that she had. But there are spiritual implications here too. It shows that God and Jesus honors the thanksgiving of people who have just enough. No doubt this widow continued to be blessed with at least enough. She made it. And possibly more. We don't know. But she was obviously blessed. Another well-known example of someone having just enough is in First Kings. It's a story of another widow. First Kings 17, verse 8 through 12. It's the example of Elijah and the widow. First Kings 17, 8 through 12. And the Lord here is speaking to Elijah, where we start in verse 8. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, Arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon. I'm thinking that Zarephath was a city in the area of Sidon, and dwell there. See, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you. So he arose and went to Zarephath, and when he came to the gate of the city, indeed a widow was there gathering sticks, and he called to her and said, Please bring me a little cup of a little water in a cup, and that I may drink. And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, Please bring me a morsel of bread in your hand. So she said, As the Lord your God lives, and this shows that that she knew who he was, that he was a servant of the Lord. She may have been received information in a dream or whatever. The Lord said, See, I have commanded this widow that to provide for you. We don't know how exactly he commanded her, but in her statement, it makes you believe that she maybe was not that close to the Lord. She said, Your Lord, your God, as the Lord your God lives, I do not have bread, only a handful of flour in a bin and a little oil in a jar. And see, I am gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Since this was the last food they had, she thought that they would probably starve after this. That would be the end of it. She obviously had no idea of praying or asking for God or knowing who God was and that he was a provider. So verse 13, and Elijah said to her, Do not fear. See, we're to not fear. We're to have confidence in the Lord. Fear is of Satan, except proper fear, of course, in the reverence and appreciation of God. Do not fear and go do as you have said, but make me a small cake from it first and bring it to me, and afterwards make some for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, the bin of flour shall not be used up, nor shall the jar of oil run dry until the day of the Lord sends rain upon the earth. So she went away and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and her household ate for many days. The bin of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil run dry, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Elijah. We see here in this story that God blessed them. They had just enough. They didn't have any extra, but they made it until the rain was restored. And after the rain was restored, of course, they could have a garden and have much more or whatever. And there's a story of Job, too. We remember Job. He endured a trial, probably the best example in the Bible. He was a rich man, an upright and righteous man, the Bible says. But God allowed him to have a severe trial, but he kept his faith. God allowed Satan to take away his riches. And we just kept the Feast of Tabernacles, celebrating the return of Jesus Christ. But Job knew about the return of Christ. Let's look at Job 19:25. We'll start in verse 23 to pick up a little of the context. And we'll see here that Job knew about the return of Christ. Verse 23, oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and laid in the rock forever. That's one of the ways they preserved something that they wanted to say. They'd chisel it out in a rock and pour molten lead in it. And that would be there for years. But his wish was granted. We're reading it out of the book now. It was recorded in a book. Verse 25, for I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day, singular, it don't say latter days, upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. So he said the latter day. He was talking about the very day that if there was one more day, mankind would destroy himself. That's when Christ steps in and takes over, is when man is about to destroy himself. You remember what he said about that. At the end of Job's trial, he said in chapter 42, verse 5, I have heard of you by hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you. Therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. So through this trial, he saw God in a much different way, in a much different light. The more we draw closer to God in prayer, in thanksgiving, the more we see God, and the more we are humbled, as Job was, and in a repentant attitude like Job. Let's look at some scriptures about thanksgiving. Just some general scriptures, and you can recognize some of our hymns and some of these scriptures. Start in 1 Chronicles 29. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 10 through 13. 1 Chronicles 29, 10 through 13. Therefore David blessed the Lord before all the assembly. And David said, blessed are you, Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power and the glory, the victory and the majesty. For all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord. And you are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you reign over all. In your hand is power and might. In your hand is to make great and to give strength to all. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name. So he recognized that all that we have comes from the Lord, our blessings, and he praised and gave thanks for it. Psalm 9, verse 1 and 2. Psalm 9, verse 1 and 2. I will praise you, O Lord, with my whole heart. I will tell of all your marvelous works. Verse 2. I will be glad and rejoice in you. I will sing praises to your name, O Most High. Turn on over to Psalm 100. Psalm 100 and We'll read verses 4 and 5. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving. When I read this about entering into his gates, I think of the Lord's Prayer, how Jesus, in his model prayer, what he said. He said, "Pray, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." That may be the key that opens the gate when we go enter the gate. Enter into the gates with thanksgiving and into the courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. Verse 5, "For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations." We are recipients daily of his mercy. If it were not for us receiving his mercy and grace every day, Satan would be happy to destroy us in a heartbeat. He's looking to destroy us all the time in ways that he can, anything he can do. But the Lord stays his hand, just like he had limited what he could do with Job. God only allowed him to do what he wanted him to do. Psalm 105, 1 through 3. "Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon his name. Make known his deeds among the people." Verse 2. "Sing to him. Sing praises to him. Talk of all his wondrous works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord." Probably remember that in one of our hymns. Psalm 107. This is hymn number 66 in the hymnal. Psalm 107, 8 and 9. "Oh, that men would give thanks to the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men. For he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness." Psalm 136, verse 1. "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His mercy endures forever." Again, he talks about his mercy enduring forever. Let's turn on over to Jeremiah. Jeremiah 30, verse 19. And I'll try to slow down, not be too fast. Copy the scriptures into my notes so I don't have to turn to them unless I run into something I just on the spot want to look up. So Jeremiah 30:19. "Then out of them shall proceed thanksgiving and the voice of those who make merry. I will multiply them and they shall not diminish. I will also glorify them and they shall not be small." Let's go to the New Testament, John 6, verse 11. John 6, verse 11. "And Jesus took the loaves." This is the example of where the little boy had the loaves and the fishes. "And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to the disciples, and the disciples to those sitting down, and likewise the fish, as much as they wanted." So from that small amount of food, they were all fed. And I just used this example to show that even Jesus gave thanks. And that's a good example for us when we're, one of the things that we need to be thankful for is our food, because he is our sustainer and provider. Second Corinthians 4:15. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 15. "For all things are for your sake, that grace, having spread through the many, may cause thanksgiving to abound to the glory of God. It is to God's glory that we give thanks. When we give thanks, we're praising God. Philippians 1, 3 through 6. Philippians 1, 3 through 6. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you. That's one of the things that we too can do. We can be thankful for each other. What if it were not all for all the congregation? What if we were here by ourselves? We'd be like that minister and the deacon, and two of us here, or maybe one, if it weren't for the brethren. Paul said to the Philippians, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making requests for you all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Christ. Something else to be thankful for, that Christ will complete the work that he has started in us, showing that we should give thanks for each other, remembering the acts of love that we see being performed continually. Finally, Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Be anxious for nothing. And this is even if we have just enough to make it. We're to be anxious for nothing. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. While he blesses us continually, we're to let our needs or requests be known to God. Jesus said, you have not because you ask not. Verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ. We sometimes give thanks for our calling. It's mentioned in the opening and closing prayer many times that we're thankful for our calling, which is good. But did you ever think or remember to give thanks for Jesus keeping his promise of what he said in Matthew 16, 18? He said, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. So down through the ages, God has, and Jesus, have protected and preserved the church. And there's been some bad times of persecution down through the ages. Satan would have destroyed the church if he had been allowed to. There's a book titled A History of True Religion by A.N. Duggar and C.O. Dodd. And I think they were elders in the Church of God Seventh Day, when Herbert Armstrong was ordained an elder. I think they were there at that time. It's a rough history of main events of each hundred year period from 31 AD to date. And the date was Sivan, which is June, 1972, third edition, printed in Jerusalem, Israel. I ordered the book back when Amazon was just a seller of used books. That's been a long time, and they've grown a lot since then. And it has many stories of times when God blessed the church. I want to relate one of those stories of a minister in England during the Middle Ages, when the church had to be in complete secrecy because of the persecution from the Church of England and the church from Rome. This minister, he was a member of the true church. He was a minister in the true church and was visiting members one cold winter afternoon. He was traveling in his buggy pulled by his little horse. And it was a cold winter afternoon. And all of a sudden, it started snowing. And it was snowing so hard that visibility was cut to a very short distance. And he became disoriented, didn't know where he was, and he knew it was not long until nightfall, and it would be dark, and that would even add to the problem. So he knew that he had better pray for guidance. So he laid down the reins in the buggy and prayed that God would lead his little horse to safety. The little horse immediately went into a fast trot. Then he made a quick left turn and then a right turn. And after a couple more turns, he turned down a lane that looked like it went into a farm, because it had fences on both sides of the road that he could see. Even with his limited visibility, he could see fences on both sides of the road. Then he saw a farmhouse beside the road, and then a barn came into view. And the entryway to the barn was open. And his little horse went straight on into the entryway into the barn and stopped. The farmer was in the loft throwing down hay into the stalls for his animals, and the minister was brushing snow from his overcoat as the farmer climbed down from the loft. And the farmer said to the minister, "Well, it's obvious that you can't go back out in this storm. Unhitch your horse and put him over there in that empty stall, and I'll feed him for you. My wife is cooking supper, and then we will go to the house and eat." While they were eating, the farmer asked the minister where he was from, so he told him the town where he was from. And the minister said, the farmer said that he had heard of a minister in that town by thus and such name, and said, "Do you know him?" He said, "I am that minister." And the farmer and his wife looked at one another a couple of times, and he said, "We've been studying the Bible and have been praying for 3 days for a visit." That's a miracle. The story went on to state that the storm lasted for 3 days, and he stayed there and counseled and studied with them until the storm had passed. Jesus indeed built his church and has not let it die through the ages. It may be into the millennium before the book of Acts is finished. You know, the book of Acts is not finished. And it'd be very, very interesting to see many of the miracles and the things that are revealed and that happened to preserve the church, and many other things too. And we can be thankful for them. and that he has protected the church, because where would we be today if the church hadn't been preserved down through the ages? It seems that we would probably all be candidates for the second resurrection instead of the first. So we can indeed be thankful for the church being preserved and for our calling into it. Matthew 5:8 says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." One characteristic of a person with a pure heart is that they are thankful and give thanks on a regular basis. God is love. We can see love. God is peace, and we can see peace. And nowadays, we can see a lot of unpeace and unrest in the world around us. But we appreciate the peace and relative comfort that we have now. We don't know what's going to happen as time goes on, but we're promised protection. And so we can be thankful for that. God is joy, and we can see joy. And we celebrate with joy at the holy days, especially the Feast of Tabernacles. We see God in our blessings, and the more we give thanks for our blessings, the more we see God and appreciate the blessings. Because when we see the blessings and meditate on them, we see the miracles that he performs continually for us. And remember the example of Job and the trials that he went through. His friends weren't much help to him, you know. He had three friends that most of the book of Job is their quotes. And, you know, Job said, I wish this could be written in a book. They must have had a recorder there, you know, all the things that his friends said. But it was written in a book and preserved for us. His wife told him to just curse God and die. She wasn't much help either. But Job stayed steadfast and came through with it with much more understanding of God and seeing God in a way that he'd never seen him before. In the Psalms, we read earlier phrases like the verses that we read earlier. I will tell of all your marvelous works and make known his deeds among the people. The National Day of Thanksgiving is probably the best opportunity that we have throughout the year to do just that. When we're with friends and family, it gives us the opportunity to talk about God, his deeds that he has done, the blessings that we have received, and the marvelous works that he does. It would be good to take advantage of that opportunity. Jesus instructed us to be a light to the world, salt of the earth. Salt of the earth makes things palatable and taste better. We can present it in a good light. But we should take advantage of the opportunity to praise God anywhere we can. And as Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 4:15, which we read earlier, for all things are for your sakes, that grace, having spread through the many, may cause thanksgiving to abound to the glory of God.